Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin or Rumble, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. Hey, if you want to rate the show, we would appreciate that. It helps the algorithms. You can just scroll down a little bit, give us 5 stars if you think we've earned it. If you want to connect with me, the best way to do that is the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions. Thanks to the sponsors, they helped to make this show happen. EMP Shield is building the best EMP device out there. It'll protect your home, car, RV, boat, generator, whatever you got, against lightning strikes, solar flares, EMP attacks, anything like that. It's fitted to your household circuit breaker with just a couple of wires. You can install it yourself. They have installation videos on their website, or you can just have an electrician come out and knock it all out. But I'll tell you, it fits with the theme of this show, being proactive. Doesn't do you much good to have one of these things after the fact, right? You got to kind of do it in advance. So do this. Go to empshield.com and just read up about it. See what you think. There's videos you can watch. If you like something, you find a bundle package over there that you think works for you, use the promo code MACRO. It'll save you a bunch of money for sure on your way out. And also, thanks to our sponsors at C60 Purple Power, to Ken and the team over there. Have you heard about the carbon-60 molecule? I mean, it was a big deal when they discovered it. The guys wound up winning the Nobel Prize. Not that the Nobel Prize is worth much these days, but I'll tell you what, this is the most powerful antioxidant known to man. It's hundreds of times more powerful than anything else out there. It's amazing. It helps to lift the oxidation burden off of your cells. So helps your body be a little bit more efficient. So do this. Go to shopc60.com and just read about it. See what you think. It's fascinating. They've got formulas for you. They've got formulas for your pet. My cat takes it every single morning. If you find something you like, the promo code is MACRO. That'll save you some money. So go to shopc60.com and read up about it. These statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, prevent, or mitigate any disease. Well, we've got a Narcopulco coming up, February 2024, February 11th through the 16th, Acapulco, Mexico, largest anarchist conference in the world. This is the 10th year anniversary. I've been fortunate enough to speak there on 3 occasions. I'm humbled and flattered to be hosting and emceeing the event this year. It's going to be wild. And we have just decided that the party is happening in Acapulco. Come on down. We'll watch the Super Bowl on Sunday, and then we'll get down to business on Monday through Friday. There's a ton of speakers there. They've got VIP dinners you can attend. I'll be hosting those at night. there's going to be a lot going on. There's always a lot going on down there. It's fun. It's informative. You'll learn a lot. Who knows? Maybe you can write it off your taxes. I'm not licensed to give tax advice, but you know, I mean, this is a summit where you are getting an education on how to not pay your taxes or whatever, something along those lines. Go to anarchapulco.com, promo code macro, to save yourself some money and come on down to Acapulco and let's hang out. Well, this episode is a swapcast that we recorded. Ricky Verandas from The Ripple Effect, Midnight Mike from OBDM, Our Big Dumb Mouth, and myself. If we had Sam Tripoli with us, it would have been a Union of the Unwanted show, but Sam wasn't available. We were talking aliens, and I mean, there's no better guy to talk aliens with than Midnight Mike. So when we got done recording the episode, it was so good. It was for The Ripple Effect. It was so good. Ricky said, "Do you want the file?" And I said, "Absolutely. This is going out as a swap cast." So please enjoy our conversation about UFOs, the alien agenda, X-Protect, simulation theory, and all that good stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, Ricky Verandas and Midnight Mike.
So, yeah, but we can get the show rolling. We got Midnight Mike with us, and you know, he's got the UFO hat, which is exactly what I want to have him on for. You know, I'm just like Bob Lazar. He's coming on to give us his expert opinion on what's going on. But that it is a topic I want to get. You know, who's that guy that Charlie, you're always talking about? I've had him on the show before, and he's the only actual UFO show I've ever done. And you have one of his quotes in your book. Oh, my God.
I know who you're talking about.
Is it Steven?
Yeah.
That's a jerk.
Steven Bassett, executive director of Paradigm Research Group.
Yeah, yeah.
He's actually kind of isn't he kind of like a anti-UFO guy a little bit?
It's tough to say anymore. I think it's like, what is his version of the phenomenon versus like everyone else's? This is where it gets confusing in the UFO community. Well, we can kind of talk about that now because everything's kind of changed.
Well, yeah. Well, let's start there. Like, what, you know, I feel like it's going to turn into like 9/11 or any of these other historical events where like there's going to be different tribes. Like, first there was two tribes. There was like, I accept the official story, or I think there's something more, you know, and UFOs were the same thing. It was like, it was really simple. Either you believe in them or you don't believe in them. And now it's like all these other tribes of like, okay, are we being lied to? What are they? Is it supernatural? Is it spiritual? Is it, you know, other dimensional? Is it, you know, what, you know, there's all, I feel like I can kind of start seeing these other tribes. And like you're saying, like there's this infighting with like people that were all apart, what I thought the same tribe, are now like, you know, I was just literally listening to a podcast about, on the Concrete podcast, Danny Jones, I believe, or whatever his name is. And I always feel like a jerk forgetting people's names, but I literally forget everybody's name.
I think that's what his name, the link you sent us.
Yeah.
I listened to it too. It was, I mean, I listened to the first 40 minutes of it.
It is Danny Jones. He had this guy called Jeremy Rice, R-Y-S, maybe Mike might know.
H-Y-S.
What's that?
R-H-Y-S?
No, it's R, just R-Y. It looks like a typo. It looks like a typo, but it's not. That's his last name. And he literally just did a whole podcast on debunking Bob Lazar. He's like convinced Bob Lazar is completely full of it. And this is a UFO guy too, a guy who believes in it. So it's like, it's just another example of all this infighting. Mike, why do you think it's just like people getting too personal with their own perspectives and philosophies on what these things are? Or is there some fuckery that people are kind of figuring out and debunking?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. So first off, Bob Lazar, I believe for the most part, Bob Lazar thinks that he's telling the truth. He might be a little loosey-goosey with some details. He might embellish some things here and there. I believe that he thinks that he was at Area 51 and that he worked on reverse engineering alien spacecraft. And one of the key things in Bob Lazar's story is when he was initially brought in to that program to do reverse engineering of UFOs, according to him, is that he was given a booklet to look through almost kind of like a story booklet of what they knew up to that point, being that these aliens are from the Zeta Reticuli star system. They had this many fingers. There were details in there. And he was like, okay, great. I got a brief history of this before I go work on this very specific part of the UFO. And he wasn't allowed access to different parts of the UFO. I think Bob Lazar is what we call a mirage man, is that they knew, they probably ran a psychological profile on Bob Lazar saying, okay, if he works out, great. If not, he's going to leak information. But he's only going to leak the information that we show him and give him. And if he leaks it, we'll know exactly where it came from because we have booklets, but we give different booklets to everyone who works in the program. So they all have a rough general idea of what's going on, but there are specific details like star systems or number of fingers, which we can then pinpoint back to a specific leaker. Yeah, some of this stuff could be absolute BS, but I think he did work on something. And whether or not it was alien or not, I think it's up for debate. I think that we do have some pretty crazy stuff, but when it comes to Bob Lazar, I think he believes it. And I think that's the important thing. He seems to be somewhat genuine. Whether or not his education really unfolds, his background, where he went to school, I guess that's kind of up for debate.
Well, I feel like, you know, people are, you know, this idea that they could just erase his history from going to MIT. Like, I don't, like, why is that hard to believe? Like, they you know, make people disappear all the time. I mean, they scrape the internet. I remember watching an interview about, I don't know who it was talking about the Sackler family, and they're like, they literally are they want to be so private that they, you know, they basically make it impossible or very hard to find any information on them. And my wife looked at me, she's like, how can they do that? I'm like, if you have money and resources, you can do anything. You can be a very hard to Google person if you have money and resources. So, you know, that doesn't seem hard to believe. The element, right? There was also that element that
element 115.
Yeah, 115. But there's some debate on if, you know, if that was already kind of known about, right? Prior to him coming out and saying that he knew about it, or I don't know.
Could have been one of his embellishments. It's tough to know. And this is where fiction and reality can kind of mix we can kind of come up with an approximation of the truth. And I think when it comes to UFOs and this stuff, we're not going to find, probably in the near term, an absolute 100% truth. We're going to find some sort of approximation of what is going on. And the UFO phenomenon is a perfect conjunction of the paranormal and political conspiracies. It should be the most interesting political conspiracy of our day, but a lot of people have blown it off as nothing much more than just some fairy tales and some people that have seen swamp gas. But there's very real consequences when it comes to military budgets, disinformation, propaganda, offing people, just taking them out if they speak too much about maybe secret programs and what may be going on. But it's probably been one of the longest going and most successful disinformation campaigns that's been run not only on the United States public, but the world.
Charlie, from your perspective, you know, being somebody who obviously, you know, like most of us, we talk a lot about government cover-ups and psyops and false flags. With the UFO thing, like, you're obviously, you know, it's like when Joe Rogan said, it's like, I believed it until the government started to believe it, you know, and then I became skeptical. Like, coming from a skeptical perspective, like, how do you see all this?
I'm a purist. I want my disclosure to not come from the mainstream media. You know, I want disclosure, but I want it on my terms. I want accidental disclosure. I want undeniable, there's nothing the government can do disclosure. You know, they can't hide it anymore. I want that. I don't believe it more because they're having congressional hearings. I don't believe it more because it's being talked about on CNN. In fact, if anything, I believe it less because it's being talked about in these places. But regardless, I do know that there's something there. There's something that we don't understand about what is happening, where we are, Who knows where we are? You know, who's coming to visit us? Is this physical beings? Is this some sort of interdimensional slip? Are we crossing over into another dimension and they're accidentally coming in to see us? Are they intentionally coming in to see us? Or are we getting a view of, are they just as confused when they see us as we are when we see them? I don't know. But I do know that the government has spent an unbelievable amount of time and resources, effort, trying to make sure that you don't know what's going on. And when they do that, that makes me want to know even more. So I don't have any particular inside information. I don't know. I know people that have seen some crazy things. And so then it becomes a matter of like, well, since I wasn't in the room to see this thing that you saw, then I have to go off of your credibility. Do you seem credible? Do you, you know? And so then we're playing a game where it's like I'm trying to make some sort of judgment call on somebody else's credibility when they say they saw something, and I have to evaluate, why would they lie? What do they have to gain from this? So they've socially stigmatized it a lot over the 70 plus years. They've made you crazy if you see this. And so what else have they tried to make you crazy if you see? Well, if you see what their government's actually doing, they'll use the same tactics and make you look crazy or sound crazy or put you in an institution or whatever. So the same tactics that they've used on hiding government lies, non-UFO, but government CIA involvement in overthrowing elections, 9/11, whatever, COVID, you name it. The same tactics that they use to try and get you to not see the truth there, they use in the UFO field too. So if it wasn't real, I don't know that they would be using the same tactics. But again, like until I have an experience myself, it's all going to be theoretical to me. I mean, I can say I believe in it, and I can say that I've seen, you know, hey, I smoked DMT this last February and saw a grid, you know, that made me think that we were in a gigantic simulation. So like, how do I process, you know, of course, who knows what that means, but how am I supposed to process that? Okay, if we're in a simulation, you hit the button for aliens, that's as easy as it comes, right? You can just add aliens to the simulation. So I think one of the things we need to understand before we understand the alien situation is we need to really get clear on where we are, what this place is, this place that we call planet Earth. Are we an enclosed system? Is it really, you know, a trillion miles away, some other galaxy? I mean, the problem I have is that the people that have told me this my entire life are pathological liars, like NASA and the government and the media. The reason why I believe the things I believe about the shape of the Earth, or whether or not we're in a dome, or whether or not space is real, or whether or not we went to the moon, everything that I know about that was told to me by the mainstream media and the government and my science books. And I know without any question that all of those aspects are completely and utterly compromised and should never be trusted. So again, I feel like part of this is like we have to get back to like figuring out where we even are in this whole game, like what our role is, and then start to try and tackle this.
Well, it's crazy because if you talk about aliens, or you talk about like even certain things like the reptilian thing that for a long time David Icke got a lot of shit for, like the more I ponder on that, the more it seems possible. And the more time, it's funny because it kind of reminds me of that Bill Clinton quote, which was probably, I'm just assuming, because every good quote was in Charlie's book, the Bill Clinton quote about like talking to the old man, or like, what was it, a janitor or something like that. It was like the UFO quote or something. Oh, and man. He talked about how like he looks back and he realized like that guy wasn't crazy when he told him that like nothing is what it seems or whatever. And that's kind of like how I am. Like as time goes by, like even some of the craziest, you know, I've talked about in the past, like I remember going down rabbit holes and like running into like Project Camelot and like some of these other like, podcasters and content creators, and they would do interviews with people. And I'm like, this person is effing crazy. Like, they're talking about different species on different planets. I'm like, it just seems so absurd. I'm like, how do you even know this? How is this, like, how can you even come up with these conclusions? And like, as time goes by, I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, there might be something there, you know? And even with the reptilian thing, like, you could talk about simulation theory, right? Like you brought up, and nobody goes or looks at you and goes, you're effing crazy. Like, people kind of like, they kind of entertain the idea, right? They're like, yeah, that's possible, right? But then you talk about like reptilians, or we could be like, you know, a species that have been breeded by aliens or whatever, like all these other crazy theories that could be possible, who knows? And people will look at you like you're insane. And I'm just like, I don't understand why this simulation theory has become like the okay to ponder on a crazy theory out of all the theories, you know, and yet other things are just completely dismissed immediately. I mean, do you guys have any thoughts on, like, you know, what is your theory? Because a lot of these things, you know, the ancient aliens thing was, that series was interesting because it really did, like, looking at ancient history and human history and the fact that maybe, you know, there's a lot of missing pieces to our story and there's a lot of unknown things, and the way that we think human history has developed could be completely wrong, or there are going to be some chapters that we're missing. And then the fact that aliens could be a part of that story, like those two topics, you know, human history and aliens and UFOs, like, it seems like they've crossed paths at some point. And there seems to be a lot of evidence that's of something like that. And then you can go into like the religious thing. Like, some people think, like, you know, maybe Satan was alien, or who knows, like all these, you know, or does it change your whole perspective, your worldview, right? Because religious people, they have a book and they have a worldview that they've kind of accepted to be the correct worldview. And then all of a sudden you throw this curveball. It's like, oh, by the way, now there's evidence that there's aliens or whatever. Like, so there's so many avenues we could go down. But like, what's your theory on aliens and human history? Like, do you think that we could have had some type of contact, or they had some type of contact with us at some point? And do you think that there's lost technologies, all these other type of conversations also, in regards to that? Well, what's your thought? I'm sorry, I gave you about a billion.
I'm going to give you an assessment of like where we're at right now with UFO disclosure. Then I'll give you my theory of this reality and UFOs. So what everyone's experiencing right now in the UFO community is basically, I would assume, something like Project Blue Book 2.0. And Project Blue Book was the third in a line of public reports produced by the United States government in conjunction with the Air Force in order to investigate UFOs, to kind of appease the public, but also at the same time explain away some legitimate UFO cases, but classify them as benign. Fast forward to 2017 and the release of the gimbal tape that's everywhere, the FLIR footage that everyone has seen numerous times, the New York Times article, and then the most recent congressional hearings on UFOs, when you had David Grush, and then two fighter pilots that have personally witnessed UFOs. That has led to a narrative, almost an endorsed government narrative, that these things are nuts and bolts, and that we could definitely use more money to study them, but don't push too hard because it might rock the boat. But most mainstream narratives like this are put in place to maintain a quasi status quo, which is budgets, investigations, and a little bit of information here or there. And it might be legitimate, true information. And I gotta believe that there are honest, good people within every bureaucracy in the government that want the truth, and that they really do push for some sort of transparency. But where are they pointing? I'm not looking there. I look at some of the stories from the past, and they don't talk about alien encounters and UFO abductions at these hearings or in mainstream media. They don't talk about the thousands, if not tens of thousands, of experiences that people have had encountering humanoids of a variety of kind, ranging from small little gray ones to big giant robots to AI that abduct people and take them far away, only to drop them back off and to say, to hell with you. I look at those stories as some sort of, well, the UFO phenomenon is much bigger than just nuts and bolts, hard machines from a different solar system. That's what they want to believe. But if you look at mass media over the past, I would say, 6 years, mass media and pop culture have been pushing the multiverse over and over again, and ranging from Marvel movies to DC Universe to even the most recent video game I'm playing, Starfield. They're pushing the concept of multiple parallel dimensions that live very close to one another, and you can access that through meditation, or if you have good enough technology, you can reach over there and punch your other self right in the nose, and it wouldn't create some sort of paradox or anything like that. And I suspect that the people who are in the know about the UFO phenomenon, it is probably, I would imagine, probably about 1,000 people on this planet that really know the truth about the origin of humanity and about the UFO phenomenon. And it's probably something, I'm going to guess, something like this. And this is going to sound wacky, but here we go. It's going to sound something like this. In a parallel dimension, there is an Earth. But on that Earth, 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs were not wiped out. In that parallel universe, that timeline, that asteroid that took out the dinosaurs on this Earth, well, it skipped past Earth. And they were, and those dinosaurs evolved and had 65 million years to evolve and to become technologically savvy enough to produce their own technology. And in that parallel dimension, they created UFOs and managed to crack the code of skipping to one dimension or another, and they are able to pop over here. That's one version. And the other version of UFOs, they are us from the future, but from a parallel reality future. They're not coming back to their exact timeline. They're skipping back over, and they're visiting us from a parallel timeline. Also, they have to couple the fact, how do you also tell people that this civilization we're currently living under is probably about the third one. And the last one that went down in glory was right around the time of Atlantis, maybe about 70,000 years ago. And those people, they didn't die off. They went underground and they kept their technology, and they have been living in parallel to us humans up here on the surface for about 70,000 years. And they've had their own technology the entire time. So there's probably three different viable scenarios for this. How do you tell the American public about just one of those without them wanting to clamor and ask for more? And how do you really verify that? You can't. It's in complete insanity. And so they're going to tell people that these things are from about, you know, 16 light years away, and they got like gravity drives and we can't figure it out. They're not going to tell them they're from a few universes over.
Well, I'll take a crack at it too. I'll tell you what started me down the parallel dimension component to this. This was a dinner I had with my first wife's family, relatives, an aunt and uncle. The aunt was they're both very intelligent. The aunt's a little kooky. The uncle was a very straight-laced hedge fund white devil, for lack of a better term. You know what I mean? Like, not super funny, not super engaging, pretty business, you know, oriented, very smart, but not like a real, not somebody that would be in, have any interest in any of this stuff. Kind of a hard ass. And they're telling us at dinner after some wine, that she had always been, her family had always been followed, had had encounters when they were kids, when they were growing up, and to this day, they still have encounters. Almost like they had been tagged as a family. Keep an eye on these people and watch them over the years. All right. And so, you know, but she's a little quirky. So you don't know how much to add. You know, you don't know. You're making the calculation in your head as to how much of this story I'm going to believe. But then the husband says, one night we were in bed getting ready to go to bed, but in bed, but with the lights on still, but just about ready to turn it off. And there's a gray at the foot of my bed. He's going, holy shit, my wife is not crazy. I'd believe her, but you know, there's some question. And he said, I'm looking at this thing and I'm going, oh my God, oh my God. And it touched my foot. And he said it sent an electrical shock through his body that basically just paralyzed him. And he couldn't really move. He thought he was having a heart attack. And then as quickly as it was there, it just kind of disappeared. And I am like, you know, the story was cool when she was telling it. The story took a turn and got a whole lot more real to me when he kind of backed it up and said, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, that's what happened. So what is the technology that allows something like that to even exist, let alone like go fade in and out? It didn't climb out of the window and get into a spaceship and fly away. It just faded away and just wasn't there anymore. So like, you know, what are you supposed to do with that information, right? Is that's a gray? Is it military? Maybe. You know, like, is this, I mean, I don't know, maybe. Is it from another planet? Maybe, but it felt like, you know, later that information would be useful to me as I was, you know, I mean, I'd already been down the psychedelics world, and not to say that that makes anything real, but it opens you up to the possibility that everything that you know is not correct, right? It opens you up to, you start to realize like what we see with our eyes, what we hear with our ears is very, very limited. So it opens you up to the possibility that there's a world beyond your world. And so when you start to hear these stories about grays coming in and going out of your bedroom in Marina Del Rey, California, you know what I mean? Not, this wasn't like in the woods somewhere. I've been to the house. I know where it happened. You know, it just, you go, well, what the fuck am I supposed to make of this then? You know, I know they talk about spaceships, right? Maybe. Okay. Yeah. I know they see lights in the sky. Yeah. I've heard of the triangles. Those could be TR-3Bs. I mean, we know that there's a military component to it. But I think that it and like Mike said, with the push from Marvel and Hollywood and in general to normalize the multiverse, that makes me feel like it isn't multiple dimensions. If they want me to feel that way, then I probably feel like I shouldn't be going that way. You know what
good
I mean?
Point.
Like,
good point. Okay.
but I don't know how else to process this with my little human brain, you know? The DMT experience I had was really enlightening, just because it because the grid extended through the beach, through the waves, to as far back as I could see and as far up as I could look, all the way back. It was all perfectly gridded out, light green, greenish blue, sort of teal, very faint, but enough that you could see it, perfectly square, no imperfections. And it felt like a CAD animation program, where you've got the framework of a face or a body or whatever, and you're going to add layers to it. And it, you know, as you're building this video, you're going to add layers, but you've got the baseline sort of structure of it. That's what I felt like I saw. So, you know, that's very confusing, because it makes you feel like you're in a simulation. It makes you feel like you're in a firmament type situation, because you could see the tops of it. I mean, it wasn't extending off into it curved, you know, it went up. And so it made me feel like, what am I in, like a snow globe or something? You know what I mean? Like, where am I? And you know, and then the fact that there's been people talking about this, I mean, if it was just a recent thing, it'd be one thing, but paintings, ancient paintings, people drawing on caves, people talking about this stuff for a long, long time, very unexplained phenomena. I don't have, again, I don't have any particular insider information to this. And I know that there's a lot of disinformation going on. You've got the Corey Goods of the world talking about blue chickens. You got them talking about 20 and back programs. You got them talking about Solar Warden and all this stuff. I'll tell you, the guy that made the most sense to me out of all of it was help me out with the name, Mike. You know him. You just talked about him in the UK, who hacked into NASA. Gary McKinnon's story never changed. His story was, I hacked in, I was pulling down data, it looked like a spaceship, I had non-terrestrial officers, I had a list of all of this, I had the USSS Roscoe Hillenkoetter, you know, like all the people that, like, how would he, like that name, these are people from MJ-12, right? I mean, the fleet-to-fleet, ship-to-ship transfers and talking about all the stuff that he saw, that story never changed. As opposed to some grifter like Corey Good, who later wound up getting exposed in court and he'd made the whole thing up. But even before the court, you didn't need that to know he was bullshitting you, because his story was like, and then they came back. And then, is there anything else you want to report, Corey? Oh, yeah, I forgot. There was this one time. It's like his story just never ended. But with Gary McKinnon, he's like, this is what it was. This is what I said. This is the beginning, the middle, and the end of the story. And there's no more. Gary, give us an update on it. There is no update. I didn't hack in anymore. I don't have any new news for you. That to me is way more credible. And the fact that the government went after him the way they did, they wanted to put him in prison like Julian Assange. Why? Right. So again, take the information out of it. Watch the reaction of the establishment to certain people. Certain people, they talk all day long. Nobody cares. Other people, they say one word, and the government comes after them like crazy. So again, some of this stuff is, you're not going to be able to, I think of it like this, since we're sort of on the space topic. The way you can, if we believe NASA, which we don't, but I mean, the way they say they identify black holes isn't by getting in a telescope and looking and seeing the black hole, because you can't see it. The way you identify where a black hole is its effect on other things near it. And so I think with the UFO file, part of it is like, let's look at the response to certain people by the government. And if the government's response is overwhelming and almost a little bit too much for what the information is, that to me says, take a look at that. Take a look at why what they're trying to cover up. I mean, if you watch Dark Journalist and Daniel List and his 140 part series on exsteganography, what you find is that is the most important secret that, in his opinion, that's what got Kennedy killed, was wanting to share that information with the Russians, and that they just absolutely could not have that. So again, look for the disproportionate reaction from the government towards certain people doing certain things or talking about certain things. And that to me is where I think you should focus if you can.
So this is the thing, is like, you know, you hear that maybe this is just really advanced technology, government technology, which it could be, right? Some of the stuff, obviously, that we see in the public is usually way behind what the military has. But even if it is government technology, some type of, you know, military technology that we're not aware of, it could also obviously be influenced by some reverse engineered stuff, right? And UFOs and the, like, so the Nazis had like some crazy, you know, obsession with finding a UFO or some type of, you know, spacecraft that they could reverse engineer. Tesla was obviously sending out messages and trying to connect with some other, I guess, living civilization or something somewhere else. It's like there's all these weird theories and people that, you know, seem to believe in something. And it's interesting. It's because it makes you think, like, you know, the Vatican, you know, Area 51, like all these kind of secretive places. Like, do you think that maybe they have the answers? Maybe they're not also searching for them, but maybe they have them and have locked them away to, you know, to kind of keep us from knowing our real origin story?
They probably know, but they might know like a facet of their own. Like I'm pretty good with certain programming languages, but that's my niche. There's other people that are really good with some other ones. And so like the Vatican they might know like their one story when it comes to everything they recorded over time. And that might be applicable to more of the metaphysical, spiritual side of UFO encounters. And people often do have those. One thing that they don't talk about in the news very often now that UFOs are all, it's okay to talk about UFOs in the news and not be crazy anymore. But what they don't talk about is that sometimes when people encounter a UFO and they're very close to a UFO, they will have a near-death experience. Even though they're not dying, they will see past loved ones who have passed on. It's recalled vividly by them. It's like, oh, I saw my grandpa. I saw my family who passed on when I got into close proximity of the UFO. And this leads one to question, well, if these UFOs have the ability to travel through the ghost dimension, what does that really make us? And that leads to one of the more disturbing theories and stories that I've heard about the nature of this reality and UFOs. And you can look it up. There's an audio book online. It's called Roswell Interview. And it's supposedly an interview between one of the creatures that survived the Roswell crash in 1947, and the only person that this creature would talk to, which was the nurse who had no ill will towards this creature and was not part of the military complex. The nurse was only looking out for the well-being of this little humanoid. And after they managed to establish a dialogue after many days of exchanging common points of reference, this entity essentially told the nurse that he comes from a race that is billions of years old, and that this physical form that she sees in front of her is just a container for his spirit, and that the soul and spirit are not exactly the same. They're just kind of linked, that your soul is kind of the personality of the spirit, and that you, us humans, you are also a container for souls, but you can't escape. Because you've been put here under quarantine because all your souls and spirits were deemed to be rebels, anarchists, and creatives that just did not fit into the current galactic order. So you guys are put down here on this prison planet, condemned to live out your life cycles over and over again, and you won't remember one life to another. And this creature basically says, I'm going to go because your military has got ill will towards me. So I'm just going to die and my spirit will travel on. I'm good. And that soul recycling kind of thing leads back to some ancient religious texts. And if we really are just condemned here, then that would create a bit of a panic if that origin story about humanity came out. Meaning that you will live on forever. So, and we're all just basically criminals. We're basically a penal colony because we are condemned to be artists. Because we are artists and free thinkers, we're forced to live here on Earth and never advance on to the next realms. Incredible kind of origin story. Something similar was rumored to have been told to President Carter, because President Jimmy Carter had a UFO experience. Applied pressure to the CIA to get to the bottom of it. And essentially, they told him, listen, Jimmy, Mr. President, this is the origin story. These UFOs hold creatures. They're demons. They basically come in and out of the ghost realm. And when you die, you will be recycled back here. There is no heaven. There is no hell. And this is it.
Intergalactic Australia.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, kind of disturbing.
Well, how can you manage society if society knows that it's like a video game? You know sure. what I mean? Yeah. You know, you just go, oh, well, I'll just
you come back
to
another character.
Back.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, without a doubt, there's something about our reality or just our existence that there's a lot we know very little, you know. Like, I think modern scientists like to think that, like, oh, they have a very good understanding of reality and nature and all this stuff, and I think that, like, we're like way off, or there's a lot more undiscovered than discovered, and there's so much evidence of it when you look at, like, you know, just the Rupert Sheldrake stuff with, like, the you know, the fact or the idea that like we're all our consciousness is all connected, or maybe we're all just one consciousness, or you know, all these weird things like that. And then like, you know, you get like the Dr. Tom Cowan and like just, you know, that his idea of like water and what's not just his, but a lot of people who think like even things like water, which we think is like a unconscious thing, could be conscious, could have some, you know, like, so to me, like these all just throw curveballs to our current worldview and says like, hey, you think you have it figured out, but you really don't. And, you know, even like my parents are, you know, we're raised Catholic, but like, you know, I got away from religion and rebelled against everything that my parents wanted me to do growing up. But they, you know, my dad's a pretty, he's like a typical Catholic. Like he would go to church from time to time. Wasn't really like a deep religious person or whatever. He just felt like he did his part in going to church. But he would tell me these stories of like things that happened to him when he was younger. And I remember being a kid, I'm like, you're effing crazy. And like, he had this one story of like, you know, he skipped school, or he skipped a grade because, and I mean, he only went to school when he was little, but like in the little village they went to, like he skipped a grade. And the next year in school, he would have panic attacks before going to school. And he would like, you know, just be crying and screaming and would not go to school. And they brought him to what like our version was of like some witch doctor or some spiritual whatever expert who, you know, just to get guidance on like what's going on with my child. He like doesn't want to go to school. He was skipping a grade. He was, you know, he was loved going to school, and then that's why they were having him skip a grade and whatnot. And all of a sudden, he's having these panic attacks only on the mornings that he has to go to school, and they're like, oh, somebody cursed him and wanted him to stay back. And I remember hearing this, and I'm like, this is the most ridiculous thing ever. My dad would look at me. He's like, listen, I can't explain it to you, but I'm just telling you what happened. I can't, like, that's all I can do. I can't tell you, like, you know, why or how or what, like, I just can tell you this is what happened. And even my mother, like, hearing my dad tell the story is like, that is such a ridiculous story. Like, how, you know, but then my mom would share stories about, like demons when she was a kid being on the roof of the house, and they would hear like horses running like every night for like, I don't know, for like a week or something like that, like at night, and the kids would be like scared. And I'm like, you guys are crazy. And this was like me becoming an atheist and me like rebelling against religion. And, you know, and now as I get older, I'm like, it doesn't even have to be religious. Like, I don't know what it is, but it could be something. And it could be, you know, who knows what it is. But like, we think because technology, and I don't know if it was like Brett Weinstein, I heard him say this, and he made such a good point. He's like, we look at like computer and processors and internet, and we think like, oh, look how like our technology is insane. We've advanced it like a crazy pace. But if you take away computers and processors and that technology, like we haven't advanced that much. Like, right? Like, would you?
No, we haven't. We haven't advanced. It seems like it's basically the same as the 80s and 90s beyond the computer and some medical stuff here and there. But it has kind of remained the same. Have you read anything by Dean Radin, Ricky? If you haven't, I recommend reading the book Real Magic. He touches on the power of the mind and the nature of time and everything. Dean Radin, if you can get him for an interview, I highly recommend it. That guy is so well-versed in coincidence, time, the nature of this reality. Incredibly thought-provoking person in his just assessment of what may be going on here in this reality. But if I could, if I could play 50 seconds of Philip K. Dick, and this is for Charlie over, this is what Philip K. Dick thinks our reality is.
We are living in a computer programmed reality, and the only clue we have to it is when some variable is changed and some alteration in our reality occurs. We would have the overwhelming impression that we were reliving the present, déjà vu, perhaps in precisely the same way, hearing the same words, saying the same words, I submit that these impressions are valid and significant. And I will even say this, such an impression is a clue that at some past time point, a variable was changed, reprogrammed, as it were, and that because of this, an alternative world branched off.
And that's Philip K. Dick. He wrote about the nature of this reality, what he thought it was, but he said he wrote about the past that he remembered in a different life. And yeah, a lot of people called him crazy, but he was pretty adamant that he was literally, legitimately conveying experiences that he experienced and remembered. And so right there, and he was talking about changes in the simulation that you may notice. We now call that the Mandela effect, where there's one thing remembered a different way, and then the other group of people remembers it the original way. I guess the most significant one that it more commonly is that in Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time music video, I remember her skirt being the plaid skirt. But apparently it was black the entire time, according to the video. But I remember it being plaid. And even Britney Spears herself remembers that skirt being plaid in that iconic video. But if you go look up that video, Hit Me Baby One More Time, the skirt is in fact black.
Yeah, but that's been explained. Apparently, when all the guys were masturbating to that video, they were picturing a plaid skirt.
Oh, okay. All right, schoolgirl.
Sounds reasonable. Sure. Well, let's not underestimate this new sort of, since we're talking about technology and we're talking about the Mandela effect and changes and things like that, you've got Jordy Rose, the founder of D-Wave, quantum computing, talking about how these computers are opening up parallel dimensions, grabbing information and dragging it back into this one. And saying that, well, yeah, of course, we've been working with the military and saying we're not really quite sure who we're interacting with. These computers are out there. Then you have to take a look at CERN, of course. And Steve Poikonen, you know, has a great bit about, you know, the marmot got accidentally thrown into CERN back then, and it spun us off into some new dimension. And he's kind of joking, but is he though? Because there's a huge emphasis and a lot of money being spent and a lot of time being spent to build something like CERN, which is a small version of what they're eventually going to be building, which will be even bigger than that, a new version. And in and of itself, it's scientific advancements. You can go, yeah, that's fine. There's nothing nefarious about that. But did you watch the opening ceremonies for CERN? Because it was downright diabolical. I mean, it was satanic imagery. Shiva the Destroyer is the statue out in front, right? So they are talking about trying to break out of this reality. And if it were the three of us, you know, when we were trying to do it, I wouldn't be worried about nefarious intent, but I don't trust any of these people. And I don't know what they have in store for us. And if they think that they can make alliances or deals with something in parallel dimensions, like we'll trade you this for that, we'll trade you access to our reality in exchange for information that you have in this other reality that we could use, or whatever the deal is. These are just the wrong people to be in charge of this.
Instead of using meditation, looking inward, becoming balanced and using religious texts to become one with the universe in order to get information and to make the contact that you wish to make, they're essentially using sledgehammers to try to pound down the walls of reality. And when you do that, I suspect you're going to have a lot of unintended consequences. And I suspect it is just like when you look at those ceremonies, yeah, they could say that it's all goofy in that they're just dressed up in costumes just for a gag. Whether or not they believe it or not, there might be some intention there, and that whatever's observing them doesn't view it as a gag and will completely take advantage of their actions. This is where UFOs and the paranormal kind of combined, and it gets into like supernatural realm, whether or not you believe in demon possession or like the ghost realm. They don't touch on that stuff in the UFO hearings. They don't touch on the supernatural aspect to this phenomenon. That's where Skinwalker Ranch gets really goofy, because it has a combination of UFOs, aliens, Dogman, Bigfoot, poltergeist. It's got a little bit of everything. And that's why the former owner, Robert Bigelow, basically said, I learned as much as I can do. I'm going to spend most of my time now on life after death and the theory of consciousness and the nature of consciousness.
Now, do you think that they're two separate things, or are they the same thing, right? Like, I'm always like wondering, I'm like, okay, are the what people think are the spiritual experiences really ET or, you know, some other dimensional experience, you know, UFO or whatever, you know, some type of experience of having contact with some other race or you know, living species or whatever, or are they spiritual, or are all the alien contact stuff, are those actual like demons and spiritual, like, or is it all based on your worldview, right? Like, if you're religious and if you have some type of experience, you might immediately assume that like it's a, you know, it's something that it that coincides with your religious views, right? So you think it's like a soul or a demon or an angel or something like that. Or if you're not religious and you believe in, you know, life in somewhere else, then maybe you immediately jump to the conclusion that it's some type of you know, alien contacting you or whatnot. But if you look at like you know, the what was it, Zimbabwe, right? The school in 94. Encounters, that series on Netflix, actually did a little episode on it. And it's just like a lot of those people, when they're talking, like if you mute it and you see them talking, they look, they have the same feeling and almost describe it in the same way that spiritual, somebody who has a spiritual experience describes their experience, right? And I'm wondering, are they one and the same, or are they, you know, are they connected? Like how are these things connected, and are they connected, or are they, can they both coincide, you know, equally, you know, that there are life in another planet that sometimes makes contact, and maybe there's some type of life on, you know, if it's roaming souls or angels, you know, or, you know, I don't know. It just, it's weird. I'm like trying to connect the dots.
Tony Merkel did a great documentary movie called The Shape of Shadows, where he went to Ryan Burns' place, adjacent to Skinwalker Ranch, spent a couple of days there, filmed with his team. Tony's a religious guy. He's a Christian guy. It's important to him. I don't know about the other guys on his team. Regardless of what their religious feelings were, they all had the same experiences. They all saw the same things. They all felt the same way. They saw UFOs going, you know, lights going by all night long. And they, you know, and they were with a Native American guy that grew up on that property, adjacent to that property. So he knew it really well. They had a really spooky experience talking about skinwalkers. I mean, I don't know if people know Ryan's story for getting involved in buying this, but he had a near-death experience where he pulled over his car to the side of the road because he was in this area of Utah, didn't own the land or didn't have any interest in owning the land, but saw an old Indian person walking on the side of the road far away from anything, and was going to pull over and like offer a ride, like, hey, do you need a ride? And it was a hooded kind of figure. And the last thing he remembers is pulling over and saying, hey, do you need a ride? And the police found him hanging out of the side of his car. And they thought he was like, are you drunk? Are you wasted? He didn't know what had happened to him. And then they said, oh, hang on a second. Like, we know, you know, like we need to tell you like what happened to you. Cause he didn't know. And he said, do you know about skinwalkers? And so he's like, what, you know? And so that started him down that path. And Tony documented that while they were there, walking down a path, there's nothing there. Come back by it a couple minutes later, and there's like full shrine, like animal skulls and circles and all. I mean, wild, wild, wild stuff. Stuff that was really tough to imagine. And Tony, you know, I mean, Tony had to process this with his religious upbringing. And he had, you know, you drag that into this and you try to be as objective as you can, but like you start to ask questions. Is this demonic? Is this, you know, how do you process it for your, you know, based on your worldview, angels and demons, right? If you're somebody that's like a Christian, you might think this is demonic, you know, but whereas somebody that's not just takes it as, oh, this is just, you know, ancient ancestors coming back to build these shrines for us, but we can't see them with our eyeballs because they died 1,000 years ago or something. You know what I mean? So it takes you down a weird path. I would suggest people go to find Shape of Shadows. I think you can rent it on Amazon or buy it or whatever. It's worth watching.
It does appear like, so that Zimbabwe experience and a lot of others, people do claim to have some sort of rich spiritual engagement with these humanoids. And I think in part, it is due to us humans. We're very malleable. Our consciousness and the way we think is very malleable, and we're susceptible to suggestion and control, especially by a superior intellect, such as what we're facing with these humanoids. A lot of time there is a form of sleep paralysis, or you're just not able to move. A lot of times they can put you in a trance when they engage with you because they don't want to be hurt. They don't want this ape to freak out and start hurting people. So a lot of times when you encounter one of these things face to face, you're not in control of yourself. They are in full control. And they will just use some sort of mind meld or telepathic control in order to keep you in place and keep you chill. On the rare instance where somebody's abducted and they have full control and they freak out, they can do some real damage. There's one guy, I think it was like in Ukraine 2008, where he's a skilled fighter, and he was abducted with his wife. And he started doing some karate moves on these guys up in the UFO. And then they said, we had enough of this. They gassed him, made him horribly sick, and incapacitated him. But he was able to kind of break that spell. It wasn't a religious experience for him. It was a terrifying abduction experience for him. And so some of the ones that are highlighted in, I guess, mainstream culture when it comes to UFO encounters, They tend to focus on the more benign, enlightening ones, encounters. But ones that I've read, it seems to be there's no choice from you. You're along for the ride. And if you're lucky, they'll just make you forget it because it is a very traumatizing experience what they put people through.
Well, the crazy thing is like some of these experiences, like the Zimbabwe school experience, like they're all adults now and they all took lie detector tests and all this stuff. And they all had, it was like 60 of them, and they all had like similar experiences. And then I don't know if you recall like the part where they said that they felt like they were communicating with them without like using words or whatever, like they just like consciously sending messages to them. And it reminds me, every time I hear that, it reminds me of what Elon Musk told Joe Rogan, and what he keeps repeating, is that one day we will communicate without, you know, without using our mouths, without our voices, without, you know, that we'll be able to communicate in another method, which makes me think like, okay, you know, that kind of brings me back to like, is this some just, you know, other civilization that just their technology or understanding of reality, or they've had, like you said before, like they had some breakthrough where they have created some technology or some method of communication that we just haven't discovered yet. It's curious, you know, and then also like you're talking about terrifying, like I remember Phil Schneider, remember that whistleblower? Yeah. Back in the day, wasn't he missing some fingers? He got shot at or something like that with a laser.
Yeah, the Dulce base.
Yeah. And then there's also that story. James Fox had that documentary about the Brazilian UFO crash that, like, you know, the police shut down like the village or the town. And they had an alien that they brought to some like undisclosed location or whatever. And the police officers that actually like transported these aliens died like soon after some like weird, like, you know, disease, some random thing. And so it's like, it's weird. It's almost like, it kind of reminds you of the story of the Europeans coming to the, you know, the Americas, right? Like bringing disease because their bodies weren't prepared for it. You know, they end up killing a bunch of Native Americans because their immune systems just were exposed to something they were never exposed to. It kind of, you know, it kind of makes me think about that, right? Like, it's like, what was on this thing, this alien, for lack of a better term, that, you know, we got exposed to that could potentially kill somebody who apparently wasn't ever exposed to whatever it was. I mean, I think it's terrifying that they don't have penises. I mean, that sounds like a horrendous future, but
they don't need them in the future.
And it
kind of looks like that's what they're turning us into right here. It's like we're at stage one for like a 10 stage evolution out of our gender and our sexual orientation is they are trying to breed that out of us through chemicals and a whole bunch of stuff to get us ready to be those alien greys of the future.
Well, once you're married long enough, it does become a useless tool.
It makes you wonder, like, are we built like a Tesla where we have all these skills that are just latent? And if you pay for this turbo, they just hit a button and it activates a turbo in you. Do we have a limiter put on us where we by default have ESP, the ability to communicate and the ability to do, you know, as they say, we use a small percentage of our minds. Why is that? Have we been handicapped somewhere? Are we like a tagged animal or some, you know, a clipped wings on a bird where we're not really going to fly away? We don't really know what we're missing because we never had it to begin with. It seems like if you were running some sort of prison planet, you would want to tag and clip the animals, right? So that they couldn't get off this place and come have a different experience, right? So it makes me wonder, like, have we been put into a situation where if left to our own devices, we would have a whole lot of higher abilities. But because we are in this situation, we are on a prison planet, if that is in fact the case, that we have limiters on us, where we just can't go past 85 miles an hour, no matter how hard we try.
That's why I found that I would tell people, like, watch that series Brain Games, because I just want you to understand how much of what you see as reality is really a trick, or it's assumptions your brain's actually making. And it would, I mean, you're literally watching an episode where they're telling you exactly how your brain, I mean, they play tricks on your brain, and they're like, how everything's just a assumption. And you know, it just makes you rethink, like, okay, everything that I'm perceiving to be reality, like, one, it's limited, right? Like you said, maybe there is a way of tapping into what's really around us or some other, you know, with something else with DMT or, you know, whatever it may be. You know, like, you know, I always use the example, like, well, you can't see radio waves, you can't see Wi-Fi, but it's there. Right. And, you know, we could tap into it if you have the right tools. If you have a radio, if you have an antenna, you can tap into these things. But if you didn't have these tools, like, they would be there and there'd be no way of us knowing it or understanding that they exist. And so I wonder, when people do these psychedelic trips, if there is, you know, if it opens up, if it gives you access to another sense, you know, and like you said, like, maybe we are limited, like, on purpose, like, you know, they have limited our ability to tap into other things. And maybe DMT is a way of bypassing that, you know, or not just DMT, but anything that you know, can open up your mind consciously. You know, it's wild, because, you know, the hard part and the fun part of these conversations is that it's just endless questions with no freaking answers.
There's no real definitive truth here. It's all a bunch of stories. That, I mean, that's what makes the conversation fun for some. For me, my co-host hates talking about these endless loops of what ifs and maybe reality's that, and we will never know things. He's more of like a black and white. It's got it. Like there is truth or there isn't. I would say, like, you know, when it comes to the UFO topic and the paranormal, I'm not sure if there is an absolute truth. I don't even know if the public is ready for conversations like this at the congressional level when it comes to a committee hearing talking about the nature of what this reality is. I don't think that they're ready, even though I think Weinstein, Eric Weinstein, was on a podcast recently, and he says we should have that scientific convention right now, bring all the greatest minds together and come up with the theory of everything. We know we should have a real quorum and figure out what is going on, because he was saying basically, in his opinion, a lot of scientists just spin their wheels, and they're basically treading water trying to solve problems that really have no consequence for humanity as a whole. And it's time to get together, come up with a theory of everything, and figure out how to get off this earth.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
I'm out.
I can't figure it out, but I'd be along for the ride. Well, we should have more conversations like that at a higher level. Unfortunately, we don't get that.
Well, you're right. And the thing is, but the thing is, just so your co-host who likes to, you know, he does it. And I get it. Like, these conversations can go in loops where just like we're just questioning things. To me, like, that's why I've always been attracted to philosophy and all these things, because it's like you should question everything. And so much, there is no black and white in anything. It's just like we accept one thing to be true and that becomes our reality. But it doesn't mean it's true, and it doesn't mean there's any way of proving that it is true. Like, every mainstream perspective on reality is just a theory. Like, even our understanding of gravity, our understanding of anything, it's just a theory. There's no real way of proving it. It's like you do some experiments, you come to a conclusion that you think makes sense, you know, based on, you know, you observing these things. But it's just a theory, and like everything is just a theory. That's why even with like the flat earthers or the supernatural people, or, you know, whoever it may be, like, I will entertain all theories, because for me to say that one theory is correct and all other ones are wrong is no different than, you know, what they say about religious people, right? Like, oh, for your religion to be right, all the other ones have to be wrong, you know? And to me, it's like, well, you know, I won't do that. I can't do that. Like, there's no way for me to be certain that one is right and one is wrong. So I must entertain all of them, and kind of, you know, as time goes by, you filter out the things that make the least sense and hold on to the things that make the most sense.
Remember the Union show we did on near-death experiences? That was fascinating.
Yeah. So fascinating.
We had the guy that froze to death.
Oh God, I still remember that one. Yeah.
And he was just like, I died, you know, I was dead. It was just, there's just no other way about it. I mean, so
you remember that one, Charlie, when he got to the other side, he was given a choice what he wants to come back as. It's almost like he was given a choice of eight different simulations. And in one of them, he's an artist. In another one, he's a lawyer. Another one, he's a doctor. And he got to pick his career path that he came back as.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, wow. So there's like multiple different simulations running, and on the other side, you can kind of see them all. And he chose to come back as that particular version of himself. And it's like, wow, okay, interesting. That means that if I had to model this as like an IT person, you have a bunch of different virtual machines basically linked up to a cloud computing service. And once you get up to the cloud, you can look at all the machines running below you, but those machines don't talk to each other. They're not networked to each other. They're only networked to the cloud. And once you get there, then you can look down, but it's getting there is the problem.
Maybe that's where the whole cloud analogy comes from. You know, the man in the sky sitting in the clouds making decisions about your life. I mean, we're in some sort of virtual technical cloud, it seems like.
Well, the other thing is, like, so like you were saying, like, let's figure out, let's understand science by getting a bunch of scientists, right? Or let's understand history by getting a bunch of historians. Like, it seems like most of the time the breakthroughs come from people who aren't experts. You look at, like, you know, people who are really doing a great job uncovering the nature of reality and all these things. I mean, look at Randall Carlson, Graham Hancock, Ben from the Uncharted X YouTube channel, Jimmy Corsetti from the Bright Insight YouTube channel. I mean, these guys are not experts in these fields. You know, Graham Hancock was not an expert in this field, and now he's become like a face of, you know, our ancient civilizations. And it takes somebody who's willing to say, hey, I don't care what the dogma is, like, I'm going to look at this from all perspectives, or I'm going to entertain, you know, maybe a theory that's been dismissed, or I'm not going to dismiss something just because I have already established what my point of view is on this. And that's so important. And I think that, you know, these are the guys that are going to eventually connect some of the dots for us. I mean, some of the work that they're doing, some of the interviews that they've done, I find the most fascinating. And you know who really knows a lot about this too, which is surprising, is Danica Patrick. You know, the race car driver. Yeah. Her podcast that she did with Jimmy Corsetti was phenomenal. And that's, I'm like, wait, she does podcasts? And then I listen, I'm like, holy crap, she really knows her shit. Like, you could tell she's been down, you know, multiple rabbit holes. And, you know, she's a very, you know, and again, a very mainstream person who like is willing to like entertain these things. And, you know, I think it just, it's so intriguing because there's absolutely, you know, the story of Atlantis, obviously, and all these other things, all these, Ben from Uncharted X talks about like the pottery that was made with, like, you know, a stone that you couldn't make with even modern machinery, you know. And it seems like there's a missing piece to our understanding of many missing pieces to our understanding of reality, you know. If it, and that's why that guy, the Malcolm Bendel story is so interesting, because it's like, what is he uncovering? You know, like, what has, you know, it's not new technology. It's rediscovering some old technology that was lost along, you know, our journey.
Lost or hidden.
Yeah.
Intentionally hidden, right? There's that too. So you have to start to ask, like, how much of this is just we'll never know, and how much of this is, well, we would know a little bit more if these pricks weren't hiding it from us, you know, and like, or intentionally. The quote that I had from talking about Stephen Bassett, from executive director of Paradigm Research Group, the quote that I used in the book is my favorite quote in the entire book. He's talking about, imagine this is a gigantic jigsaw puzzle, and you're born into this world, and you're given the box, and your mission is to try and fit these pieces together. And if you do, it'll be a clear understanding of the world in which you live in. But unfortunately, and unbeknownst to you, the government in which you live under has made a decision for political reasons to take some of the pieces out of your box and throw them away, and then add pieces from somebody else's box to your box and not tell you. And then you go about your life trying to put all these pieces together, trying to make this puzzle fit, and it never will. And it's an impossible situation. He says that this is extremely effective for serving the state. You know, so some of these mysteries of the universe aren't even really mysteries of the universe. It's just government fuckery that has gotten itself into the interference process of your discovery. Because if you were to know this, then you would be one step closer to making them obsolete. And that's what the reason why government is so fearful of a lot of these things is that the minute they realize that you don't need them anymore, they go away. And so there's no more need for them to be there to control you. So again, part of this is hidden on purpose too. So when you've got guys discovering free energy or toroid fields and things like this, and saying, I can build a car that runs on water, and then next thing you know, you blow up. that's because some of this stuff is, there's been a decision made to suppress this information. And that to me is the most frustrating. I accept that there's parts of this universe that our little human brains will never understand, and that's fine. And I don't have unrealistic expectations, but I do have a problem with the government interfering with that process, because it's not their job to do that. And they're making it their job, and they are, as Graham Hancock says, like, to prevent you from exploring your own consciousness is criminal. And yet it's the government that does that by making certain things, DMT and ayahuasca and mushrooms and all these things, illegal, so that you won't explore your consciousness. That's a governmental decision. That's not the universe is a complex place we can't expect to know at all. No, this is we are actively trying to suppress you from finding out the nature of who you are. And how dare they do that? You know, that's I suppose that's why I speak at anarchist conferences, right?
Well, if you look at like the light bulb conspiracy, there's a great documentary about planned obsolescence. I think the documentary is called Light Bulb Conspiracy. And then you look at like Who Killed Electric Car, Gas Holes, another really good one. Another great documentary is called Pump. And these are just examples of how the elite, you know, in a specific industry or just in a whole, want to control the technology. They want to control our worldviews. They want us to control what we think is possible. And so that's what makes me think, like, maybe when you look at like secret societies, and I kind of want to get your guys' opinion on this, like when you look at like the Freemasons and you know, and then there's all these, you know, scientists that talk about how like there's a mathematical way of looking at Mother Nature and the universe, and how like things weirdly seem to make sense mathematically. And but do you think that maybe the elite or secret societies, maybe somebody does have, you know, like you said, is hiding, you know, our true origin story and some of this technology and some of this understanding of nature and our reality, and they're suppressing it to basically control us?
Oh, yeah. I think so. I think Charlie and I are on the same page there. I believe that there are secret societies that have persisted throughout as long as there has been written human history here in this version of our civilization, and it ranges from, you know, the Knights of Templar to the Knights of Malta to the Airship Club of the late 1800s, early 1900s, and there are people who were Masons that were keepers of this knowledge, but to me these fraternities are just a way to network and meet other like-minded individuals. It is quite the thing that most U.S. presidents have been Freemasons, but I think it goes beyond that. I think it's just a place to network other like-minded go-getters, because I personally know a few Freemasons, and they, I can tell, are fairly good people. They do community work, and they have done plenty of good things with their lives, but there are people that will use those connections for power, control, and their own self-gain. So what's secret societies are really in control at this point? I don't know, but it probably is linked to the airship flap of the late 1800s, early 1900s, who were using technology that was well beyond what was commonly known to exist at that time. But they did appear to be, people in those ships did appear to be mostly humanoid and involved with what we would consider to be advanced yoga practices. I know it sounds bizarre, but a lot of the airship stories of that time, they involved people that would come down and do various meditations, various poses and forms, things that we would consider yoga today. Because they were spiritually aligned that way. They had a certain knowledge of how things were supposed to operate in this reality. Then they got in their airship and took off. I think that persists. We get little tidbits here and there for our consumption, but there is a book somewhere about how this place operates and its origin, and we can't check that out at the library.
Boy, I'd love to, though.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
Just to take a peek, see how it all works. Yeah.
Well, you look at the moon, right? You look at Antarctica. Like, all I to me, these things are still mysteries to me. Like, today I was driving to the office from the gym, and it's like, you know, bright daylight, early in the morning. I'm looking at the sun. I turn to the other way, and I'm looking at the moon, and they're both in the sky at the same time. And they're, you know, I could see the moon perfect. And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, what the fuck is up there? You know, I just like, you know, you just sit there and you stare at it and you're just like, all I have is other people's theories to help mold mine. But, you know, obviously I think most of us probably believe that the moon, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I think, are we on the same page when we think probably the moon landing was fuckery?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's fuckery. But I read there's a book out called Who Built the Moon by Alan Butler. I've got it on my bookshelf over there. And, you know, there's questions. There's real questions. And I think that it's okay to have questions, right? I think the problem is when a group, a religious group, a government group, or whatever, your family, whatever, whoever doesn't want you to have questions, that to me is suspicious. I'm not saying that that everything is necessarily a lie, but if I'm not allowed to question reality, why? Why not? Are you afraid I might discover something? Are you afraid that, I mean, again, if everything is just as it is and natural and normal, why the defense, why the coordinated defense? Why the, you know, why the subterfuge on UFOs and everything? Why wouldn't the government just come out and say, we're blown away by this too. We're still trying to figure it out as well. Like, let us know if you found something, we'd love to know. But instead it's like, oh, you can't talk about that. Oh, you're crazy. And so that's what you do when you're trying to maintain a big, gigantic lie. You have to constantly defend it. But if it's the truth, you just leave it alone and let it defend itself. It stands on its own. And I see a lot of people trying to keep the lies going by preventing you from asking questions about it. But my question is, why am I not allowed to question it? If it's real and as you say it is, and I ask questions, won't I come to the same conclusion as you? Oh yeah, but probably, because it's the truth. Wink, wink. But it's like, all right, well then let me at it. What do you have to worry about? But they are very worried about us digging into these things. They're concerned about us asking questions about NASA and moon landing, and they're concerned about, I mean, they've tried to dismiss us as just being, you know, kooks and everything, but the UFO thing, where we started this conversation, where we'll probably end it, there's a lot of effort, a lot of money, a lot of very powerful people that are working extremely hard to make sure that you and me don't know about this topic. And so my question is, why? Like, if there's nothing nefarious going on with it, then why aren't we allowed to be just as blown away as they would have been when they discovered this stuff? Why is it information good for them but not good for the plebs?
So when it comes to the moon landing, I think the most reasonable explanation is we went, but they padded the entire event with B-roll, pre-production, post-production to create a complete propaganda narrative for the space race versus the Russians. I believe we did go a few times, but there were stuff filmed before and after, and to complete the entire movie narrative in order to win that propaganda war. So they had to create stages and set pieces down here and roll it in late, like afterwards. And there was no way for them to really guarantee that a video signal would make it off the moon and make it here. And they couldn't have it just drop out. So you roll in your B footage that you shot beforehand, and it creates a nice narrative. Also, there are verifiable videos of UFO fleets over the moon. You can go on YouTube and just look at UFO fleets and their shadows casted on the moon. So the moon is much more than what they say, which is just a big, I guess, titanium rock in the sky that just so happens to fit over the sun. And it's entirely too big for the size of our Earth. And there are stories in ancient texts of the time before the moon. It is a curious thing. And I know David Icke is not a big fan of the moon. He's not. He believes it to be, a radio reflector dish, pretty much, an antenna that helps create the illusion of this reality down here, that the moon, according to David Icke, is an antenna relay for our holographic reality overlay that we live.
And he would suggest that his conversations with Credo Mutwa back in Africa, the Zulu shaman, tribesman, probably fueled that, because he talked about a time, like you said, a time before the moon.
Yeah,
his people talked about how there was a time that before the moon was in the sky. And so you go, wait, what? Okay, hang on a second. Now what does that mean? Yeah. You know, so that opens up a whole new can of worms look, it's worth exploring, right? It's worth time. What's the worst that can happen, right? I mean, you sound a little crazy. I've already crossed that bridge. You know, I'm not worried about that. It's a fascinating thought experiment too. And I think that anyone that's paying attention just to the modern world, they know that they're being lied to about a bunch of very unimportant things. So you have to assume that you're being lied to about the most important things: who you are, where you come from, what this place is, what our technology, how, what that moon is. We see that moon every night. Most people don't understand it. I know I don't. I don't understand it. I don't know how it all works. But there's an agenda to keep you on a certain acceptable path when it comes to these things. Talking about accepted arguments within a framework, but if you get outside of that, it's no good. They want to fit you for a tinfoil hat and all that good stuff. So
these conversations are really fun. The only bad part about these conversations is everything else I do the rest of the day seems insignificant. Just it seems like literally nothing else is worth, like, it just seems like pointless. It's like, oh, who cares about, you know, if I play well at my basketball game later, when, you know, I don't even know what reality I'm living in, and if this is just a simulation, or am I of, you know, an ancestor of some reptilian breed that, you know, mated with humans, and you know, I just, it's wild, you know, that's where, like, the astronaut thing, you know, when they came back and everybody talks about how, like, they look like they were lying, or they were, like, just petrified or something, you know,
they look like hostages.
Yeah, that's a part. Yeah. But it's like, I guess even if the story happened the way they told us it happened, like, you might have the same type of, like, how do you experience that? Like, seeing, you know, you would hear about astronauts, if you believe in space, and if you hear about astronauts having, like, this weird spiritual feeling of, like, seeing the Earth from a distance and, like, realizing that everything you've learned about history happened on this little ball that you're now observing from afar, and how wild of experience that is. And I'm just like, yeah, I mean, it just, you know, I feel like that would probably change you a bit, you know. And
there are astronauts that have literally been on record saying, I saw an angel in space. Several. So I'd say I saw a space angel is what they said. They've also claimed to have seen a snake in space. That doesn't get talked about, but they're on record saying that. So it is a spiritual way when they say they have an angelic experience. But yeah, when they came back from the moon, they look pretty depressed.
Yeah, it's wild. But what a fun conversation. Hopefully we'll have to do some more what if type of conversations again and just piss everybody off, because we have no answers. There's no answers. Everything else you do is pointless. Just sit there and ponder. But yeah, thanks so much, guys, for taking time out of your day to have this super fun conversation. Hopefully we gave people some rabbit holes to go down. You know, we brought up some documentaries, some old researchers, and you know, there's so many things. I mean, some of us have been down this rabbit hole for a long time. You know, the Phoenix Lights, like, we brought up Phil Schneider, like, some of these initial stories that really piqued our interest in these topics. But we have a lot of younger listeners who might not be familiar with, you know, some of these stories. So that's why I'm always happy when people reference old stories that we grew up, you know, researching, because I think there's a lot of new listeners that are like, wait, I don't know who Phil Schneider is. I don't know anything about the Phoenix Lights. I don't know anything about, you know, this or that researcher. So without a doubt, hopefully we gave people some fun rabbit holes to go down. But let the listeners know if, you know, how they can, if they don't know, they should, but just because that's, I guess, how I end shows, let them know where they can get your stuff and how to keep up with you guys. And, you know, if you have a new episode coming out, let them know when that's coming out. And then if you have anything else exciting going on, let people know about all of it and anything else you want to reference. And go, Mike, Charlie, whoever.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Macroaggressions is now on Rumble, because why not? You got to plant your flag in some different places, so you can check it out over there. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions, on Instagram at Macroaggressions_podcast, I think is officially the one. And the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, for now. It's changing, but for now.
And for me, people can go to obdmpod.com or rbigdumbmouth.com. We do shows Wednesdays and Saturdays, and I'm sure in not next episode maybe, but in the next few, I'm talking about time travel and people who have gone through time and have come back and told us what the future holds.
Yeah, without a doubt. And send me that that person you referenced that we should interview. Maybe yep. You know, Charlie or I can reach out and see if we can get him on one of our shows, or maybe even get him on the You Have Done Wanted, because he sounds super fascinating. And I'll put links to, and also send me links to the Tony Merkel documentary. I'll put that in a show description too, if people are interested in that. And anything else that we talked about that you want, you know, you think might be worth throwing in the show description, just send email to me and I'll put it there. I'll put links to also the Near Death Experience Union Done Wanted episode, because that really was like a, I feel like it was a gem of an episode that people are going to, you know, forgot about and kind of looked over. And it was just such a really, really interesting just conversation, and like the similarities with experiences and all that stuff. It's like, they can't all be lying, right? They can't, you know, all be faking it. It's wild. But thanks again, guys, for taking the time. Of course, if I don't talk to you before, I'll definitely see you guys on Monday with the You Have Done Wanted, my brothers from different mothers, and three of the four horsemen from the You Have Done Wanted. I'll see you guys on Monday, and thanks again. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll keep in touch, guys.
Bye, Ricky. Bye, Charlie.
Thanks, bye. Guys.